Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 4th, 2019. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
How's it going, buddy?
I seem to be a little more awake than you are. What's going on over there?
I don't know. I'm just getting up at 5:50 today to help watch the grandkids.
The trees aren't going to trim themselves.
And I'll be doing that after the show, so I'm already behind by 4 hours. So
yeah, all right, okay. Well, I'm still on West Coast time, so.
I don't sound awake to you. What do I sound like? I don't understand.
Very monotone. You're very Ben Stein, Ferris Bueller.
Anyone?
Yeah, it's a little bit more active, so, all right, well, the Ante Up Sweetwater Series and Ante Up Poker Tour event, that was the first series ever at Honolulu Casino's new poker room in San Diego, wrapped up a successful week on Sunday. Had a lot of fun out there, Chris.
Met
a lot of cool people, and a lot of people that was their first trip to Honolulu, which is always phenomenal when we do an event like this. It's part of it is exposure to get people try out a new place, so that was really cool, and everybody I talked to had a really good time and really liked it, so hopefully they'll come back and support this fantastic room, and hopefully we'll be out there next year for one event, if not two. So
right.
So Hari Yang is our main event champ after negotiating not one but two deals, Chris.
Holy cow.
One at four-handed that guaranteed him the most money, and then another heads-up that gave him the title, the magazine cover, and the remaining cash. And gave Christopher Smith the world championship seat. And two Ante Up listeners, Scott Lewis and Ralph Mittman, made the final table. And it was fun railing them until they went heads-to-head on one hand, set over set.
Oh.
On a board that was like, I think it was deuce tray four, too. So dangerous board to begin with. And one of them had a set of fours, one of them had a set of trays. So, they all bowed out before the end. So that would have been nice to see an Ante Up listener win. It was a good final table to watch, regardless. So, our Hari, that our champion, he was, it's funny because, you know, we just talked last week how I was trying to get him left to make a deal. This guy was Wayne Brady at this table, man. He was, as soon as he got the final table, he was talking deal, and, no one won any part of it until they finally got four-handed, and then that almost collapsed, but they ended up doing it. It wasn't an ICM, actually, which is kind of rare. I haven't seen a good old-fashioned chop in a long time. Everybody figured out what ICM was, so but they all kind of worked it out, and then at the end, after heads up, I think maybe half an hour or so, they finally said forget it. One guy really wanted to go to California, and Hari really won the title, and worked out. So
yeah,
like those deals where everybody seems to be happy. So
yeah.
Ronald Segney went into the final event needing a third place finish, and for Ante Up listener Tavish Margers, not the cash, in order to win the player of the series. And Chris, he went on to win the entire event.
Oh, man.
And got the title as well, too, which came with a $550 tournament entry. Margers was second, got a $250 steakhouse credit. And trust me, I went to that steakhouse this trip. That's worth it. So have fun there.
They got nice steakhouses on the West Coast.
I'm sorry?
They have nice steakhouses on the West Coast.
Of course.
Yeah?
Well, and at casinos, too.
Yeah, casinos. Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. We had the Seafood Tower there.
Oh, what's that?
It might not be called a tower there. It's a tower under valley, but it's the same concept. So it was two massive Alaskan king crab legs, like where you break them in half, and like, you remember that time at the Tony G took
the win? Yeah, the win.
Yeah, yeah, those things, right? So imagine four of those, a bunch of oysters, a bunch of shrimp, and some tuna.
Oh, man.
And then we added a lobster tail because, you know, we're just...
It may be 10 o'clock in the morning, but I'm ready for some seafood. That made me drool.
It was good. It was good. So Tavish enjoyed that steakhouse credit. And then Christopher Smith, who, as we mentioned, finished runner-up in the main event, was third and got $100 in tournament entry. So nice. Kind of cool to see these Player of the Series things. They do it out of Thunder Valley, and now they're doing it at Mobile 2. So give some people something to play for. And you get excited at the end, too. And it's kind of a little bit of the chop negotiations, very little at the main event, because if they would have ended that in time, everybody could have gotten in the final tournament and still picked up some more points. So
yeah.
That ended up not working out that way. But another thing to consider when you're talking about a chop. You know, can I get in one more tournament, win some more money there, and win a title? So the Antioch Poker Tour next moves on to Gila River Hotels and Casinos Wild Horse Pass. That's in Chandler, just outside Phoenix, Arizona. It'll be November 11th through the 16th. And for all the details on that, visit antiamagazine.com/wildhorsepass.
Man.
All right, Flutter Entertainment, the parent company of Patty Poker, and the Stars Group, the parent company of Poker Stars, are merging in a deal valuing the new company, which will be the largest online gaming company in the world, at $12 billion, just shy of what Antioch's worth, Chris. And the company also owns FanDuel, and the opening of the U.S. sports betting market was the big driver in this merger. Kind of lost track of this, but 18 states have legalized sports betting now, Chris. 18.
Wow.
I think there are only 50, too, right?
Yeah, I think there's – well, I don't know. Some states I don't count anymore. But that's incredible. I didn't realize that they own FanDuel until I read your note. That's insane. PokerStars is doing a lot of proactive things with like their ownership, and you know, it's because they also merged with Fox too for that. So now that's right,
yeah,
for the sports.
Well, they didn't merge with Fox, but they had a kind of licensing deal.
Yeah, right, a deal with
right. So where they're sports betting, so that'll be interesting to see what they do with that now, because Patty Poker obviously already has their sports markets as well too. But I think that was it. I think obviously, as we mentioned last week's show or a couple weeks ago, that Stars is really making a big push for sports betting here in the States. So,
but can this help us, though? Can it help poker somehow? Because if they get so big, they get a lot of money behind them as far as, like, you know, lobbyists. I mean, can this help us somehow get poker regulated, online poker in our country?
Well, I won't be the negative Nancy or the Debbie Downer and say no, because there's a possibility of it, but I would also caution our listeners not to get too excited about that possibility. It seems like everything is moving in the direction of sports betting now. I think, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the show, you know, that's the profit center for these states that have legalized it. Poker's not really making states much money in terms of tax revenue, so, and that means the people operating them aren't making as much money, right? So,
right.
I would imagine they will slowly get away from poker and continue to build up sports betting, but could be wrong. I mean, obviously there's enough money there to go around that they can support those other things, but to imagine that this is going to help grow the poker, I think, might be a little bit of a stretch for us now. But
okay, hope I'm just hoping. You know, they get so big that they'll have a lot of power, maybe. But I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's certainly it. I mean, it's a $12 billion company worldwide, so. We'll see, but it should be interesting.
All right.
All right, as we mentioned last week, Poker Pro Ronnie Barda continued the curse of Poker Pros on Survivor, as he was the first player voted off of the Island of Idols. Actually, the first one ever to be voted off first. The other poker players at least make it to episode two. Right?
Yeah.
they at least get clips in the opening montage. And if you want some more insight on the somewhat surprising result, listen to longtime Antioch listener David Bloomberg's Always Fun Survivor podcast at robhasawebsite.com. He actually wanted to come on the show and talk about it, and I'm like, we don't do that anymore. But I do enjoy listening to his show after every episode, because it's great for Mike, because I'm in a fantasy league, and it's nice to get his and his co-host insight on what happened, because they delve in way more than the casual fan does, you know, because there's that Ponderosa thing they go to when they get kicked off, which is not really a restaurant with a salad bar like we all thought. and then other interviews and things like that, so they kind of get that information that didn't air. And I did read a couple articles about our interviews with Ronnie after he got kicked off, and very interesting to hear his take on it. That you know, obviously he was super embarrassed to be the first one off. No one likes to be the first one off, right? Probably played his poker hand a little too strong there, where, you know, he went after the most popular, or what seemed to be the most popular person and tried to get them off, which is a compelling argument, I think, to make. But that early, I don't think it works. I think you need to do that a little bit later in the game.
Do you remember a few weeks ago on the show I said to you, I could have sworn there was something about this Ronnie guy in the past, right? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember what it was now. It was that he was annoying as hell, and nobody liked him.
No, there's the funny thing. You mentioned that to me last week before the show, and I told you I hadn't watched it. And we talked about it this week. And then the guy that drafted him in my fantasy league said the same thing. So I was prepared to really hate watching him. And I was even telling David Bloomberg this when we were messaging back and forth. I'm like, I just didn't see that for some reason. And maybe I did watch it, and I was a little sleepy, so maybe I – there was a line that he mentioned in an interview that he wished he wouldn't have said, and I remember him saying that, so I missed that. So, but generally speaking, he wasn't somebody I loved, but he also didn't annoy me, not as much as that Aaron, that gym owner guy. God, I want to kick him.
Well, that's because you're as annoying as hell, too, so, I mean, you recognize it.
I like to be the only annoying person, yeah, so I don't like any threat to my throne there.
It was like 10 minutes into the show, and Gene's like, oh, man, we got to get this guy off. I can't stand this guy. And
I'm like, wow, really?
I'm like, okay. Yeah, I know. He's annoying. And then everybody on Survivor thought he was, too. And that's what I remember. I remember watching him on TV and being like, ugh, man, this guy would be – I would not want to be at this guy's table. And that's probably part of his game plan at poker. But you can't do that when you're playing a social game. It's different when you're trying to get under somebody's skin, make him make bad moves. But when you got all these other people ganging up on you, you can't do that. And yeah, I'm surprised it didn't last more than, I mean, most of the poker pros figure it out. They can last halfway through. The first one off, that was unbelievable.
I think one of the weaknesses poker players have with this is that poker, the rules never change, right?
Mm.
So, you know, you're always going to have a flop, a turn, and a river. You know, flush is always going to be more than a straight, right?
Unless you're playing short deck.
Well, that's true. But you know that before you get in the tournament, right?
Yeah.
You don't enter a tournament and then, like, all right, level's up, and now we're playing stud. What?
I'm just being annoying like Ronnie and you. That's all. I was trying to be annoying.
But, you know, Survivor, it does change. You never know. I mean, you know the structure of the game, right? But
yeah.
The rules change every time. So, you know, you can't have a game strategy, I don't think. You can have a game philosophy, I would say, maybe. You know, hey, I want to be the nice guy. I want to be the jerk. I want to be sure I get the idols, all that kind of stuff, right? But you never know what's going to happen. I mean, you didn't know what this island of idols was, which I think is going to end up being super stupid. But so, you know, I think that's probably a weakness that poker players have, is that game doesn't change. So you go in, you have to adjust players, obviously, and figure out their tendencies and how they're going to act. And you can't always predict who's going to make a weird move or a move they shouldn't have, right? So
yeah,
you got
yeah.
that. But the basis of the game never changes. So here I think you have to figure out how the game changes. And I think for me, I mean, that Elaine woman, I had her way down on my draft board. And then as soon as I saw her play it, I'm like, man, I like her a lot.
Yeah.
On my team, right? And then so I think you need to adjust to that a little bit, that she was playing a really good game. The fact that she went in there knowing, hey, I'm somebody that's easy a first to vote out person, right? And I'm like, I'm going to make myself super funny and get to know everybody so they're less likely to not vote me out. And I think that worked well, right? And
yeah.
He just didn't adjust to that well. I think maybe a little threatened by it. So, because the game changed. I mean, that's not something you would expect from somebody like that. So.
Well, I'm grateful he got knocked out, because then we wouldn't have to talk about it every week on the show.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I mean, most of our listeners that don't listen to Watch Survivor are probably fantastically. But anyway, go to robhaswebsite.com and give our friend Dave Bloomberg a little love, because
yeah.
We get you.
Absolutely.
All right, the V Nation Las Vegas will be holding a unique tournament in October, and many players aren't happy about it. The tournament has no entry fee and has a $150,000 guarantee. However, once the guarantee is met, the casino will keep all buy-ins that exceed $150,000. The Venetian, however, will be awarding $52,000 in drawings during the event. The casino says the tournament is designed to appeal to a different type of player with a lower buy-in of $250. And the extra prizes, which are common in casino tournaments and pit games.
Oh, man. I followed a lot of this when it first happened, and I was reading up on it. And, you know, I got to be fair here. you don't. Here's the thing: is you know when they say you don't like what a DJ is saying on the radio, you don't listen, right?
Yeah. Channel. Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's like okay, we can hate it, but you don't have to play it. It's clearly marked what's going to happen. And when I don't like that phrase, it's appeal to a different type of player. That's always kind of offensive to me. I don't really dig that. But
well, I can explain what that means after you're done. So
yeah, I mean, I know what they're saying. It's weird. But anyway, yeah, I don't have a problem with this in the sense that you don't have to play if you don't want to. That's you know what I mean. If you are worried that your money's going directly to the Venetian, then you know don't play it. But you know, if it still seems like a huge prize pool for you to play for and a chance at getting 52K and some sort of free roll, high hand drawing type of stuff that's going on during the tournament and stuff, then it might be something that you might want to try. But, you know, you can't really get ticked off at them because they're telling you what it is. You know, it's not like you walk into the casino and you're like, oh, I hate the odds for roulette. Well, then don't play it. You know, so it's weird. I can see you can get upset by it if they didn't tell you. You know, if every guarantee that you've ever played in now is revealed to you that the money actually went in their pockets after the guarantee or something, you know, you'd be fuming. But that's not what this is. So I don't know. I don't think I really have the problem with it that others have. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think to your point, I think that's the concern for most people is that while it is explained properly in the verbiage, you know, players tend not to read that stuff, right? So, you know, if you're just wanting to play a tournament, you go to Venetian, you've heard Venetian's got a big poker room, and all right, $250 buy-in, $150,000 guarantee, all right, I'm in. And then you don't read the fine print to realize what's going on. So I think that was more of the argument from the folks is that they did do a good enough job of explaining it to people. Now, whether they did that or didn't do that, that's what I'm not entirely sure. I mean, part of this problem for me is, again, I hate Twitter for two reasons. One, everybody on Twitter is freaking angry at everything.
Right.
And then two, you only get so many characters to explain. And I saw Tommy LaRosa, the tournament director's response that, you know, hey, it's clearly explained in there. But I don't know whether he didn't have enough space to or whether the casino didn't do this. That's what's interesting to me is whether they really promoted this as something different in the room so you were well aware of it before you would buy into it. If they did that, then I think there's absolutely no problem at all with this, and people need to pipe down. But what I like about it and why I'm a little upset that people are critical, I understand why they are, but they are the, when I say a different type of player, they're going after the casino player, not right. The poker player, right? So,
right.
And if you've ever played or ever seen assigned to casino for three-card poker tournaments or craps tournaments or slot or any of those kind of pit game tournaments, right? This is the style they do it in. So, you know, it's not like a poker tournament. So those are what those players are used to. So this kind of thing is not surprising to them. So this is a way of getting new players potentially to play poker. And I think we should all like that, right? Especially theoretically, players who are not very good.
Yeah. So,
you know, so think of it this way. If this is what it takes to get a craps player to finally sit down in a poker tournament, and then they sit down and he's like, wow, I really enjoy this. I'm going to come back tomorrow and play the next tournament, which is not this casino-type poker tournament. That's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if it takes giving $52,000 away in drawings to get those kind of players to play their game, I'm all for that. I mean, how many times have we been talking on the show over the years about, you know, what are we going to do to attract new players to the game? Well, here's a way. It may not work, but, you know, so I just think they need to calm down on the criticism a little bit. I get it. I understand it. If you're a recreational poker player, you might trip into this thing and not realize the deal. But you might also like it, too. I mean, if you're a recreational poker player, right, you probably don't cash a ton, right? So now if I enter this tournament and through a spin of a wheel or whatever they're doing, I don't know how they're doing the drawings, I get $1,000. All right. That's kind of cool.
Here's the big question. The way you've written it, it says the Venetian, however, will be awarding $52,000 in drawings. Is it coming out of the Venetian's pocket, or is it coming out of the player fund? If it's coming out of the player fund, there's a huge problem.
Well, I mean, but there's essentially no player fund here. I mean, that's the thing. It's $150,000 prize pool. That's what's going to be paid out, regardless of how many people enter, right?
Right.
If 4 people enter, $150,000 is going to be paid out.
Right.
If 1,000 enter, $150,000 is going to be paid out, right?
Right.
So everything above that $150,000 is going in their pocket. So from the Venetian standpoint, technically, they need to get $252,000 in that prize pool to not eat anything, right?
$202,000.
Right, to not have to take a loss on this, and then obviously they're hoping that they're going to get way more on that and make some money on this too, which they probably will with the regular rate of players they get for these events. So, I guess you could argue it two ways. I mean, you know, if the prize pool, and I'm using air quotes, you can't see me, obviously, it's an audio show. Prize pool ends up being $300,000. Yeah, technically, players are paying that $52,000 now because it's exceeded the guarantee and then some, right? But if it doesn't hit a $150,000, then the Venetian's paying that $52,000.
That's what I want to know. I want to make sure that is that. And it's not coming out of the overall player fund that's been paid for through their dollar drop or something.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that $150,000 includes the $52,000 in drawings. That I don't know. That could be. I didn't look at the.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I think I read it. I don't think it does.
So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, again, it's like a debate class. You could argue it either way, right? So the same as like we're talking about the Hinge Mom, right? So hey, I've got $100,000 in career winnings. All right, is that an accurate statement? Yes, it is.
That's right.
Do you actually have $100,000 that you won? Absolutely not.
Well, I'd want to hear from our guys on Antiup Fans on Facebook. I want to hear what they have to say about it. So I'm going to post a recap. I'll remind them that this was part of our conversation. I want to see what our guys are thinking about it. Okay, Antiup updates. AntiupMagazine.com has a more modern, sleek, and easier to navigate look. Plus, it's mobile-friendly. Check it out and let us know how we can improve it. Don't forget, too, now that we have this website, we have a new digital version of our magazine. I posted on the recap on Facebook, but you can check out our magazine. It's a new digital, more kind of enjoyable, animated kind of version of the magazine. Go click on that, check a look at it, and see what you think about it. Also, we love hearing from you guys, so if you have a hand of the week or a listener spotlight or call to floor submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post an Antiup Fans group on Facebook. Each week, we spotlight a listener who emails us, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call to Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This comes from Lance Collins, and this kind of touches on the Venetian thing for me, but we'll see. One of the above-ground poker rooms here in Houston keeps track of tournament players each month and awards points based on a number of tournaments played, as well as how deep the player gets. The more points for a final table, and still more points for winning one. At the end of the month, there's a tournament on the final Sunday where the top 30 point earners get to play for free. So far, pretty typical. But then he says, however, this tournament is also open to the general public. It's not a closed free roll. So walk-in players can pay the $140 entry fee and play against the 30 free rollers and whoever joins the open field. But here's where it gets interesting. The club does not contribute the buy-in for the 30 free rollers. They are playing completely for free, and the total prize pool only contains funds generated from paid entrants. The club defended themselves by pointing out that there's a guarantee. It's irrelevant, really, not only because they've easily covered the guarantee just on the backs of paid entrants, but also because if they pay the buy-in for the 30 free rollers, that would count against the guarantee anyway and nearly cover the guarantee on its own. To me, this really smells. I think there should be $140 in the prize pool for every player. I'm not even sure this would be allowed in some place like Nevada. Go ahead.
So I think your last point, I can't imagine any gaming jurisdiction that I'm familiar with allowing something like this to take place. So I think you're right on that. You mentioned at the beginning of this that this is a lot like the Venetian thing, and I think it is, right? So, I mean, again, you have your choice to play this or not, right?
Right.
So if you don't like it, don't play it. And if enough players don't play it, eventually it's going to go away, right? Poker Room's not going to continue to do this if they end up not getting anybody to buy in and they have 30 free rollers playing for nothing. Right? So that's really how you handle this, I think.
Yeah.
He's right. I mean, obviously, I mean, the way this would be handled in a real casino is that the casino would pay the $140 for each of those free rollers, and you would have a proper prize pool to play for. But you know, I wouldn't. It's not something I would do. Not a promotion I would run. But I get why the room probably does it. Is that, you know, you're trying to get that play leading up to it. So it's an incentive to get those folks into play a lot, and that's where they'll make their money on their seat rentals, and then you get to play in this tournament where you don't have to pay anything, and you get some of the prize pool. So I would imagine those free rollers also would like the casino to kick in that 140 from them as well, too, right? So.
Yeah.
They want that prize pool to be as big as it should be as well, too. So, Lance, what I'm going to be really interested in is, keep tabs on this and let us know how long this continues for. I suspect that it probably is not sustainable because of those reasons. But
yeah, that's it's interesting. At some point, you can look at it and be like, well, you know, they are guaranteeing it. You know, we're just letting three guys play for free. So if people, you know, were wise, they wouldn't enter it, you know, and pay to enter it. You know, but then they're saying, well, wait, I know I'm going to get a guarantee for my 140. So it's really kind of bizarre. You could do the whole debate club thing again and argue at either side.
Well, and again, this is all like the Venetian, the way that in my back and forth with Lance, he said that a couple of the players didn't really figure this out until the prize pool was posted and they did the math.
Yeah.
So now that doesn't mean that the poker room didn't explain it and they just missed it, right? So, but the casino didn't explain it. That's really horrible. But if they explained it and people just missed it, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
If you know this is the deal, I don't know why you would pay $140 to play in this, unless you just like desperate to play that day.
Yeah, exactly. You just wait another day and play another tournament for $140.
Yeah, why pay $140 when you know there's 30 people in there you're fighting against that didn't pay, and the casino didn't pay for them.
Yeah,
so
that's weird.
It's a horrible deal for you.
Hey, we have a new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are back at one of our regular home games playing 1-2. We've been playing for 2 hours and have a stack of 275. We're up 75. The blinds post, an MP limps, another MP limps, and we look down in the hijack at the Queen of Hearts, Queen of Clubs. The standard raise in this game is 4x, but with two limpers, we make it $12 to go. The MP calls, but everybody else folds. The MP is a loose player, but is mostly passive. He'll play almost anything, and really only comes alive when he has something. He busted out and rebought right before this hand. There's $29 in the pot, and the flop is the Ace of Hearts, Eight of Hearts, Trey of Hearts. Not a bad flop. I'm not all that concerned about the Ace, and we have the second nut flush draw. The MP checks to us, and we make it $20 to go, leaving us $243 behind. The MP calls with $168 behind, after a little hesitation. There's $69 in the pot, and the turn is the Jack of Hearts. Once again, the MP checks. I think we're good here. We're going to put out a value bet. We make it $35 to go. The MP thinks for a short time and calls. The pot is $135 and the river is the Four of Hearts. The MP comes alive and makes it $75 to go. This only leaves him with $58 behind. So, is he sending a message here? Trying to get us to fold? Did he just lose count of his stack? What's the move?
It's time for the VancePokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast to AntyUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Steve Palachek is back, Chris.
Yeah.
And so a little to hand within a, I don't know. I'll just say what it is, but it's a little more complicated than just a hand, so.
It's more complicated than a hand, but it's more simple than a... I don't know. It's a situation? What is it?
All right, so it's game two of a 10-game series, all right?
Okay.
The ultimate winner gets a buy-in to the 2020 World Series of Poker main event. And as Steve says, lots of Skittles involved in that. He says, as a side note, in the past week, I had a first and second place finish in other games with 40-plus players, so I was feeling good about how I've been playing lately. I guess this is what I'm saying. So it's not just winning the hand or winning the tournament for the night. There's some strategy involved.
Oh, okay. and finishing
long-term success and getting points. You get this.
Gotcha.
All right. So single table, 10 players. He says, we all play together frequently, so there's a lot of hand history to base decisions on. Starting stacks are 25,000. Blinds are 100-100 with no big blind Andy yet. Third hand of the night. We are in the big blind. The action folds to the hijack, who raises to 300. Cutoff button and small blind folds, and now it's on to us. So we had the hijack raised to 300. Nobody else in the hand. We are the last. We have pocket fours. I should probably tell you what we have.
Yeah, I was going to say, how about you tell me what the hand is? All right, so we got a small pocket pair. It's really early. We got some money involved. He makes it 300, and the blinds are 100, so I just got to call 200 and maybe win a decent pot early on. I mean, I got 25K in front of me. I can handle 200. So let's set mine and see what happens.
Yeah, I think we actually go beyond set mining here. We actually got a hand heads up, you know. Obviously, this guy could have a pair as well, too, but could be making this raise from that position with lots of unpaired hands, right? It's possible our fours could actually hold up here, or at least we can bet with a little bit more impunity than we would be in a multi-way pot. So, easy call for me here. I guess you could, because we are heads up, I guess you could make the argument that we could raise here just to see what this hijack has. I like to go back to what Steve says, that they all have a lot of history of each other. So if I felt that hijack player was somebody that I could push off this hand right now with a raise, I certainly would feel comfortable doing that with force. If it's not somebody I thought I could push off, then definitely calling. So
yeah, I never like to do that when I'm out of position the rest of the hand. But if you knew it was a player that you say that you could push off because he's just really loose and or whatever, then yeah, I might consider it just to take it down now and I'd have to worry about it after the flop. But this is the kind of hand I'm probably just going to call with early on like this.
Yeah, third hand of the night. So yeah. You go. All right. Our hero says the villain tends to be loose aggressive. We'll play any two cards at any time, and we'll bet or raise withdrawals post-flop. This is my table image is of a tight player who plays a lot of ABC poker, can fold big hands when I think I'm beat. It says some of the better players take advantage of my image sometimes, but I do not think the villain is one of them. He does not tend to take position to account for himself or his opponents. Last season, he finished 10 out of 10 and missed the first game of this season due to work travel. So with that extra information, I guess that's where I'm getting back to. I mean, I think this is a spot where maybe you could raise this guy. Having a tight image yourself, the players have to give you a better give you more credence for a better hand there.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say what he did, but I'm guessing we just called. So the flop is Jack 7-4 rainbow, and we are a first deck.
Well, we clearly check. I mean, we're one of the guys that were just in the blinds. We just called because it was so cheap, and we're got a huge stack, and we let him keep the action. We don't just bet now and make him fold his, you know, king queen or something. We totally checked him and let him see bet, see what happens, and then. You could just call as a great flop. I mean, nothing is getting there on the next street from somebody who raised in a hijack. I mean, unless he has something like 5-6. So, really, this is, or even 8-9 or something. I mean, that's just not probably likely. So, I'm going to just check call, I think. I'm going to check, let him bet a decent amount, call, and then on the turn, reassess and maybe bet into him or let him, if it seems like he's going to bet again, let him do it.
Yeah, I'm going to walk the dog as long as I can in this hand, this one. So we'll see what happens. Now, if he checks behind here, then we obviously got to start betting on the turn.
Yeah,
But if he's going to keep firing at this, I'm going to keep calling and let him keep giving me some dog food.
So. Yeah.
All right, our hero says we flop bottom set and decide to let the villain see bet with the intention of check raising. I don't want to check raise here.
No, I don't want to scare him.
Yeah. I want to let him keep fire another turn on the turn. Not chase him out right here. But, all right, we'll see what happens. He says, my plan works out with a villain betting 800 into the pot of 700. Wow, that's a nice bet. And so it's back to us.
I might just call. Like I said, we talked about it. I mean, I don't think there's any danger on the next street. I mean, if he somehow hit a set of sevens or jacks, you know, that's going to suck.
So we're going to lose it all anyway.
So he might as well just call.
Yeah, again, I like calling here and let him, if he overbet the pot on this one, maybe he'll overbet the pot again. And That's going to be pretty nice. So,
yeah.
All right. Our hero has a different take, though. He says, we are definitely raising. It's just a question of how much. I think for a short moment and raised to 2,200. Villain thinks for a minute and then raises to 3,800. Back to us.
Wow. Well, now it seems like we've got somebody who either has ace-jack or an overpair to that jack, and they're pretty happy about it. So,
or jacks or sevens, so this is where I get a little scared. But
yeah, but I don't know. Let me ask you something. If you had top set on a rainbow board like this, and somebody bet into us after, and then we raise their raise, you know, and then, I mean, I don't know if I think I just call and let them.
Oh no! At this point, if I got somebody that wants to raise me back now, I'm like, I got that fish on the line. I'm going to reel it in. So I wouldn't be raised again with a set of jacks or set of sevens here. Now, I'm not saying that I'm petrified of those two holdings. I just have to give those credence now. So, you know, at this point, I think maybe I'm just going to call now because I don't, you know, I'm hoping he's on something like you mentioned, like a two pair hand. I don't think he's doing this with ace jack now. Right? I don't think.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, this guy finished 10th out of 10th the year before.
That's true, yeah.
You know, so maybe he does. I don't know.
Yeah, well, either way, I'm like, I think I'm a little bit cautious now. We're early in this this tournament. You know, I don't know what their point series, how the points breakdown are, but I'm going to guess if you're a first out, you don't get anything or you get some limited. So I think there is some strategy in trying to not do the normal thing in poker, which is play to win, right? I think there's some credence to getting far enough to get some points and then playing to win, right? So.
Right.
I don't want to go out on a third hand here, so I think I'm going to slow down here, call, and check call the rest of the way, and hope that I'm not up against one of those sets. I mean, there's plenty of money in the pot now. I don't need to get more money in, I don't think. So.
I don't know if I could check call the rest of the way. I can't do that with just two hands. I mean, I would see me getting a little more aggressive. If this guy bets again on the turn, I might raise him. I don't know. I just can't see check calling with a set. You know, there are the set-over-set things. We talked about it in the NEO Poker Tour event just happened and all that, but I don't know. I have third hand of the night. You know, this guy's kind of loosey-goosey, and he's finished 10 out of 10, so I don't put him on being a great player. But I don't know if I could check call the rest of the way. I got to get some value out of my set, I think. But anyway, let's see. Let's see what happens.
All right. Well, he raised a 3,800, so are we calling here or you re-raising?
If I'm with you, if I think I can call one street now and make and then check to him and make him make some big bet and then get it all in, because it feels like this guy's gonna want to bet the next street, especially if it gets a little more wet on the board. So
I don't think this guy's going anywhere.
Yeah,
so
let's call, check, and let him bet and then put him to a test. I'm ready to make some money on the turn, I think.
Okay. All right, here says, I'm surprised by this move. He says, in reality, this is a good thing, as now I can start to narrow down his range, pocket pairs from aces down to sevens. Ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack. I'm not sure where ace-queen came from, but or really ace-king of that matter, but I guess it's possible. He says, since it's a rainbow flop, I do not consider any flush draws. A suited 5-6 could be a possibility, as he likes to bet draws, but his 3-bet suggests better than a draw here. As stated, the villain likes to gamble, but usually will fold when I show this much aggression back. He says, the action is back on me, and I still think my set of fours are good here. I 4-bet to 10,000. He says, I don't think I've ever 4-bet in my poker life. villain thinks about for the 30 seconds and shoves for 25,000.
This guy, I don't think he has a set. I really don't. I really feel like when you have that kind of a dominant set or something, I mean, I feel like if he had, like, a set of jacks that he's just going to, you know, I mean, I guess when we make it 10 grand, he's probably got something like kings. I don't know. I feel like a set of jacks, this wouldn't have played it this way. I feel like it would have just been like, I'm going to get what I can, try to, because you don't want to scare anybody when you have the absolute nuts. So this guy wants to, you know, he must be convinced that we have a hand that he can beat. And it just, I don't know. I just don't think he has a set of jacks. I think if he had it, if he knew he was golden here, why would he keep pushing us? I feel like, I don't know. I don't know. It doesn't feel, something doesn't seem right here. Something seems, I'm going to call though. I'm not going anywhere with a set of fours.
All right. Wow.
You're going to fold a set of fours? I don't think
no,
so.
I honestly can't fold a set of fours, so I'm going to call as well, too. I guess I go back to what I said, though. I mean, this is not a situation I want to get into this early now.
Right.
I don't really see a scenario where this we wouldn't have been getting it all in by the end anyhow, so I guess it's a little weird for me to say that. But because, you know, if we had just called the 3,800, which is what I would have done, you know, now we've got... Wow, 10,000 in the pot. So his next bet's going to be at least 10,000, and that's on the turn, right? So then, yeah, we're going to get it all in at some point, anyhow. So I mean, I guess I shouldn't really worry about it too much. So yeah, I guess if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out with a set, you know, flop set. I mean, that's a hand to go out with, right? So
yeah.
And there is a lot of reason to believe that he's got something that we can beat here as well, too. So kind of sucks that we got the. Got a big hand this early on, but yeah, I'm not going to go anywhere. So,
All right.
Our hero says, I tank for what seems to be like 5 minutes. I narrow his range of the over pairs or one of the other sets. I think, is he playing to my table image of being able to fold big hands, or does he really have the bigger set? Am I ready to go home after only three hands and significantly reduce my odds of winning the 10-game series and a return trip to the main event? If I fold, do I show my set? I've been working on my knit table image and think this could be a defining moment in changing that image. After my analysis, I decide that he has an overpair. I make the call and table my bottom set. The villain tables queen, queen for an overpair. Yay me. I made the right read. Turn comes a jack giving me a full house and a little more relief, but the poker gods would have none of that as another jack comes on the river.
Oh, no.
Jacks over queens, beating my jacks over fours.
Oh, no.
Flop set just got counterfeited. Table went silent as I just slumped back to my chair to reflect on what just happened. The villain went on to take seven of the remaining nine players out and winning the tournament. Wow.
Oh, no. That's brutal. Yeah. You know, that reminds me of the whole TJ Cloutier thing about the pair that loses the most, the hand that loses the most money is bottom two pair. Because they get counterfeited, but yeah. I never think of counterfeiting set.
Getting counterfeited,
that's
yeah.
Unreal. Oh, that's sad. Oh man. See, but he's right though. He played it right. He put the guy on the right hand. He made him commit his whole stack to an overpair. He flopped his set like he wanted to. Everything went the way he wanted it to. And the only way I think you get this guy off his hand, maybe. No, I don't think you do. I don't think you do.
No, even, if he was willing to five bet all in on this flop with an overpair, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, even if you shoved on that turn after all this betting.
He might go away if there's an ace or a king comes on the turn of the river, but again, we're not trying to get him to go away. We wanted this scenario. We just didn't want to play out this way, right? I mean, we had him dead to two outs, and pretty much dead to two outs.
The other outs of the jack. Yeah, but if you're right, if we do make the call on the turn and not so aggressive, then the jack comes. Now three jacks looks like are on the board, and you could have gotten them off his hand. But at that point, you don't want to because you've got fours full of jacks. You think you're good. You're hoping he has a jack. So,
right?
Yeah, so no matter what we do, it doesn't matter. We're screwed.
Yeah, the only time is if we would have got to the river. I mean, so here's an interesting discussion. It's hard to say because we wouldn't know how the betting would go until then. But if we still had chips left on the river when there are three jacks out there, now what do you do?
Yeah.
Get away from it at that point?
Yeah. At that point, I think you can. Because you can put them on any random seven, any random jack. They're making quads. Or a bigger pair than your fours, which is easily out there. So I think you can get away from it on the river.
Yeah.
But I don't think we never get him off his hand. So that, yeah. But yeah, we can get away from him if we played it a little more casually. But it was such an aggressive hand. Wow. Right from the beginning. Aggressive, aggressive.
Yeah. I mean, again, as we talk about the deep stack, at Hamul, the tournament directors are shocked at how many people went out in the first two levels, including myself. But that's what happens. I mean, it doesn't matter how deep you are. I mean, if you get two good hands going at it, you know, all those chips, whether it's 10,000, 25,000, 100,000, are going to get in the middle.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't matter at that point. So.
Wow. That's brutal.
That's a tough way to go out, Steve. Sorry, man.
Sorry, Steve. But you made the show. Right? That's got to be worth like one position on that.
Always a good consolation prize.
All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Lock.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.